Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. Let's start the show.
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Dave.
I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Jay.
And I am super fucking excited to bring you guys our review of Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker.
Finally here.
It's finally here, Jay. We did our top 10 Star Wars moments last week.
Mm-hmm.
Want to just say, I am so sorry. Because I got a few comments when they're like, dude, cantina scene? Like, you didn't even have cantina scene in your honorable mentions. And I was like, fuck, I spaced. Fuck, I spaced hard. Because, like, the cantina scene is, like, this moment where, like, you've seen humans and a couple of cool creatures. And you know
the funny thing is, in pre-production, we actually talked about it.
We talked about the cantina scene.
Never thought about putting it on our list.
Omitted it.
I don't know how we did that.
And then, like, the cantina scene is where you're introduced to all the myriad of different alien species available to you within the galaxy, especially in the original trilogy and stuff. And I was like, fuck, I love that scene. I even used the music for that scene in the episode, but I didn't put it on our honorable mentions list or even in our list at all.
We're not perfect, Dave.
We're not perfect. We're not perfect. So your voices in the social medias and on the emails have been heard. I understand. That was a glaring omission. I'm not going to go back and change the list now, but I will admit fault when it was committed, and we did it dirty, Jay. We fucked up a little bit.
But look, you know, this was just a tip.
This is just a tip.
Now you're getting the full girth of Star Wars reactions from us now in this episode, all of it,
all the way to the balls,
all the way,
because you measure to your balls,
every inch. You have to, and you got to push in farther.
Every inch, yeah, that's right. So. That's where we are at now. I mean, that was just to whet our beak for Rise of Skywalker. But now the Rise of Skywalker has come out. You and I have both seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea that, like, I was so itching to discuss it and talk about it that I got you to up your movie time.
You did.
By 24 hours.
Yeah, I saw a nice little window of time I can get away from work. And I saw a short, I went for it. You know, I saw a 145 Dolby showing, obscure, you know, close to sold out, but it wasn't sold out. And it was nice. It was a nice little, you know, nice little theater, mild mannerisms as far as like cheering and stuff like that and different kind of moments. It wasn't too boisterous in that kind of regard. But you're right. I had to see it because you saw it opening night, Thursday night, and I was like, all right, I can't wait until Saturday morning to see this movie.
There
were
tears in my
show. I'm sure it was, and I was pinpointing watching this movie. Oh, Dave's going to cry there. Dave's going to cry here. Oh, that's a Dave moment.
I cried once during the movie, but I can't really get into it now. I will get into it in our spoiler section at the moment that I cried during, and it was the most emotionally impactful moment for me, and it was an emotionally impactful moment for a character that I resonate, me and my wife both do. So anyway, Jay, without any further ado, let's get into our review for Rise of Skywalker. Now, like all reviews that we do, we're going to be doing spoiler-free up front, which
it's going to be hard. It's going to be very short and sweet.
Because we're going to have a ton to delve into in our spoiler section. I'm already assuming that most people listening to this have seen the movie, because this is not the type of movie you want to go into colored by any type of reviews. You and I went in mostly blind. I know you looked at some Rotten Tomatoes scores and saw a few reviews, but only headlines of reviews. You didn't read a full review.
Sure. I knew it was a mixed bag.
I actually stayed off social media for a week prior to this.
Yeah.
Once the premiere came out, I didn't look at any early reviews. I didn't look at a Rotten Tomatoes score. I wanted to go into this completely blind and maybe only colored by their marketing that they provided to us, and that's about it. Now, for my disclaimer going into this, I am a film fan. I'm a film buff. I guess you could say a movie buff. I hate the word film, but I'm a movie buff. But I'm also a massive, massive, massive Star Wars fan. It touches me in a way that only that one priest ever did once, right?
You stole the words out of my mouth. Yeah. I was going to say
it gets to me in a way. So I want to offer a disclaimer here, because I'm going to do my best to review this as a film and leave my Star Wars fandom in the background. However, that's kind of impossible.
I don't think you should. Because I think a big part of this franchise is about that.
Right. Well, one of the reasons that I am such a rabid, you know, movie fan is because of the Star Wars itself. So, but I want to review this as a movie and try not to color it with my fandom too much. And also, like, I had a great sentiment that was put out there by my friend Chris over at I Like to Like Things. He posted something on Instagram that basically said, like, it doesn't matter what everybody feels. It doesn't matter about the discussion around it. We're all sitting in the theaters and we're seeing a new Star Wars film, and nothing else can beat that feeling. And that's 100% true. No matter what, like, I mean, the day I got married, the birth of my kid, these are days that do trump this. But just going to the theater and
there's not much else.
Yeah. And seeing a new Star Wars film fills me with such giddiness and joy that I don't think I could really express it into words. When it's when the screen went black after the previews, I was
and then all of a sudden, bang!
Oh, I love it, dude.
Star Wars. And then the script comes and we'll get into the script too.
Right, we'll get into the script. But like, it's a feeling that I, as a person, it's hard for me to describe. Like, I liken it to when I rode Rise of the Resistance at Disney, because again, it's a new Star Wars experience that I'm getting. It's something that I'm not used to. So, not used to. It's something that I don't get all the time, right? It's like when you finally talk her into anal, like, you're just super excited.
It's like, not this guy.
It's like that.
Never had any interest in that.
All right, Jay, let's get into our review.
What we've done all this time.
What are you doing there, 3PO?
Taking one last look, sir, at my friends.
Confronting fear. It's the destiny of a Jedi. Your destiny.
We're all in this. Till the end.
All right, and I got a synopsis for this movie. Now, it was tough for me to do a spoiler-free synopsis because I can't even talk about what's said in the opening crawl, because that in itself is a spoiler. Right off the bat, this film has been shrouded in darkness and secrecy. But my synopsis goes like this, and I believe this is extremely spoiler free, so I don't even need to put up a warning. It's been several years since the events of The Last Jedi. A lot has happened since then that you'll learn about in the opening crawl. But the Resistance is still struggling to gain a foothold against the First Order, and Rey has been honing her skills as a Jedi. But when a mysterious transmission from the outer reaches of the galaxy has been received, Rey, Finn, Poe, and Chewbacca must race across the galaxy to retrieve an artifact that will put them on a collision course with Kylo Ren and his dreaded Knights of Ren. In this conclusion to the Skywalker saga that will ask you to swallow some huge, horse-sized plot pills without a glass of water. And that pretty much sums up my feelings about the movie. That last line right there is, the first 45 minutes are throwing you so many new plot points that were not set up in any of the first two films that I felt like I was rushing to catch up.
It's a jumbled ADD mess.
It is. Like, they literally kind of start the movie off with Poe light speed skimming.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a spoiler either, because if you stayed for After the Mandalorian, this is the scene that they showed you where he's light speed skimming and stuff like that. You know, and that's the way I felt that J.J. Abrams was just like, we got a lot of story to tell you, so we gotta like hit this ground running like real quick. You're gonna need, do you have your inhaler with you? Good. You're gonna have to hit that a few times.
That's how it starts. Absolutely.
In this first act. And that's how I felt. Like, it was, the first act was a jumbled mess, and I truly feel bad for the editor of this film, because I feel like they had a daunting task ahead of them.
They did.
Having to try to make a cohesive sense of what was being filmed, what was on the script, and how to portray it to us on the screen. So that that's my first big problem with the film, is the fact that the plot is so heavy, so plot heavy up front. There's so much exposition. There's so much that is told to you but not shown to you, that it's very difficult to get your footing and to find your bearings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's one of those things where you had no idea what the hell was going on. It didn't even feel like a Star Wars movie. It almost felt like a weird, like, typical Hollywood movie that was just jumping around, very, you know, excessive action stuff, very excessive plot contrived moments and stuff, right, like that, setting things up.
But I think about The Force Awakens and how, like, you know, the landing ships for the stormtroopers, yeah, land on that planet, and then they all come out and they all start land on, I believe it was Jakku, and they start firing on the village, and like, they give you a scene that brings you into the story. They give you one perspective that then brings you into the greater story. And then The Last Jedi, very much in the same vein, does the same thing, gives you a smaller view of the story that brings you into the larger story. And that's the way all Star Wars kind of start out.
You know,
but this was just like, hit the ground.
I think it's 100%. They had a lot to do, and they had a lot of, I don't want to say so much course correcting, but in some aspect, they had to course correct the trilogy in one final film to make it somewhat sensible.
Well, that's,
and I think a big part of that had to do with, you know, Kathleen Kennedy and the team behind, you know, the scope of the map of Star Wars for the three movies, you know, this trilogy.
That's my problem with this entire trilogy, right? Like, Force Awakens comes out to positive, mostly positive critical reviews, mostly positive audience reviews. Mm-hmm. But the big complaint was that, like, it's a carbon copy of A New Hope. It's a carbon copy of what we got before. Give us something new, you know, blah, 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 blah. So they immediately course correct, and Rian Johnson does something that is completely new, that takes Star Wars in a completely different direction, that...
In many ways, a better direction in some ways.
That's opinion,
though. It's opinion.
But what I'm saying is, it goes into a different direction, and it offers a different point of view on the Star Wars saga than we had seen, especially from The Force Awakens. That gets critical praise, but is lauded by audiences, and really the audience is the only person that Disney and Lucasfilm care about pleasing. So then we get this film, which immediately hard left turns it right back into The Force Awakens in a way, but then kind of straddles this line where it doesn't know whether to upset the balance or whether to fall right back in line with everything we have gotten before and give us a carbon copy of something that we have gotten before. And it this film felt like it had no identity. It was a sequel to The Force Awakens, and it didn't do a lot for The Last Jedi. Now, I understand the reasoning for that. The majority of the audience didn't like The Last Jedi. However, I don't like the fact, and you can scream at me all you want. You can tell me that they always had this in mind. You can tell me that this does pay homage to The Last Jedi. It doesn't. Its story may take story points from The Last Jedi, which then makes that still, you know, part of this main story and still part of canon, but it does not pay very much reverence to the message of The Last Jedi whatsoever, and just moves forward. And to me, that is very clear that there was no overarching story. There was nothing that they had planned from beginning to end. Even George Lucas, when he was doing the original trilogy, had a rudimentary idea, a timeline, a storyboard of how his films were going to work.
Only filmmaker,
right,
for those three movies.
No, granted, he did have 9 movies planned at first, and then after Empire Strikes Back, he decided to cut it down to just the 3, and then made some major changes to certain characters. Leia was originally supposed to just be Leia Organa, and there was supposed to be a love triangle between Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, and stuff like that. And then they were going to actually find the mysterious sister of Luke Skywalker in episodes, you know, 7, 8, and 9, and that got scrapped, and they decided just to end it with 6. But most of the other stuff, for the most part, was kind of like planned out. The Emperor, Darth Vader, all that stuff. It was all kind of just planned out. It was all right there.
Yeah.
And there was a creative vision behind it. Despite the fact that it had 3 different directors, there was still a creative vision, a producer behind it that was ushering the story that they wanted to tell forward. This didn't have that. This didn't have that creative voice. This didn't have a story in mind. This was very much a child playing with action figures, is the way that I like to look at this. And this movie felt like it is the fourth quarter. There's a minute left, and they are on the 10th yard line, and they got to get all the way down to the 90
yards, right, score a touchdown.
And then get a two-point conversion after that to win the game.
Right.
It smacked of that level of desperation. It really did. And I would like to say that you know, I watched this film without that coloring my vision. But there's a lot of things in this movie where I was just like, I don't know why you're doing this.
It was very blatant. Yeah.
But you are very clearly course correcting. And don't get me wrong, I get you wanting to course correct after the fan reception of the last one, but you jam-packed so much into this movie. Like, this movie,
while a lot of things you just had to go with, because it ultimately didn't make any sense.
This movie asks you to just go with it, and while it does give me great character moments, some of the best in this trilogy, it is some of the best acting in
it
this
really
trilogy.
It really is. That's
it's
true.
It's some of the best acting in this trilogy.
They elevated the script.
100%. It is still stuffing 10 pounds of plot into a 5-pound bag, and then handing it to you and having you make sense of how to get it out of here.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And it's one of those things that, you know, I think whether you are a fan of this movie or not, that's the big thing that everybody can agree with. It's just a matter of, do you go with it or you don't? Do you punish it for that and you can't get over it? Or can you just move on with it and go with it because you do love Star Wars to some degree where you're okay with the faults?
Now, let's be honest. I am the person that can accept it for these faults, take the pill, swallow it, and move forward.
Yeah,
because
I can in some degree, yeah.
But what did we say in our last episode when we were doing our top 10 Star Wars moments? Star Wars, while Wars is in the title and the space battles are great and the action can be great at times, it's really at its heart about the characters and the emotions that you feel for those characters, with those characters, and about those characters. This still does that. It still makes me feel for particularly the three main characters that we were introduced to in The Force Awakens, Finn, Poe, Rey. It extrapolates on them. There's a few things that they add to Poe's story where I was just like, all right, you really want to turn him into Han Solo as much as you possibly can here.
They did.
In the last little bit. But you're still giving me more character development for them in this third film than I have gotten in the previous two films. And you're giving them some truly great character moments. And this film truly, to me, is the best performance of Chewbacca that I've seen, I think. Like, there's a moment
where
Chewbacca hears some news and his reaction is the only moment that cut me so deep, like, in my heart that I am almost welling up with tears right now just talking about it. So, it did a lot for our characters.
And that's even with panning out pretty far distance, you can still see him acting really, really well in character.
Right.
It was good.
And right, of course, Star Wars, the visuals are great. You know, the action is pretty good here. I don't think it's the best of the series.
It was fine.
I do have some issues with some of the direction of, I guess you would say, the DP or possibly even second unit director or whatever. There's a couple moments where, like, shots that were chosen just really bothered me. There's one panning shot that kind of like circles around a group of characters, and I was like, wow, how out of Michael Bay's book is that? And then I actually mentioned that on social media, and someone brought it up to me, and they went, yeah, they did that in The Force Awakens around Maz's castle too. And I was like, oh my god, they did. And I was like, but for some reason here, because I guess I had nothing else to look at but the wasteland of the Pisana desert, I just, you know, it didn't do a whole lot for me. And the characters that it was panning around didn't do a whole lot for me either. There's a lot of new characters that are going to introduce to you in this film. Some are great. Dio, the little droid, I love him. He is like an abused puppy that has been rescued from a shelter. I absolutely love him. Babu Frick, adorable. I want to take that little gremlin home. But then we also see Knights of Ren. You've seen them in the trailers. They're here. They're in this movie. They don't do fuck all.
Another big drop ball.
I know.
Situation. It really was.
But it almost feels like a legacy of Star Wars
to
give you cool characters and then have them do nothing. Mm-hmm. Boba Fett looks super cool, does nothing, dies in a shitty way. Captain Phasma, very cool looking character, does nothing, dies in a shitty way. So here's the Knights of Ren, pretty cool. They're not going to do anything for you in this movie, though. So, like, that's just kind of like how Star Wars works. Here's some cool looking characters. We've teased them throughout the entire trilogy. You're ready for them. You're primed for them. You've lubed up. You're ready to go with it. Yeah, it's a 2-inch dick. Sorry. All right, Jay, any thoughts that you have here?
We pretty much hit on everything as far as non-spoiler. I have a lot of spoiler comments and questions and things to say and talk about because, you know, I'm along with you. I mean, I went with it for the majority of it, even though it was very glaring, the issues
right.
Throughout the movie, because I still had fun with it, even though sometimes it didn't feel like a Star Wars movie. But, you know, it did have a lot of great Star Wars character moments. And I think the acting really, really, really made this movie a lot more watchable for me and enjoyable for me as well, because that really did shine overall.
Right. I mean, that's how this is a third part in a trilogy, is the fact that the characters have been built up in the last two movies that you still resonate with them. You still root for them. You're still interested in the story that they're going through in this, even if it's being told to you in a haphazard manner. You know, I don't really blame J.J. Abrams for this. And Jay can attest, I'm not some like J.J. Abrams apologist or anything like mm-hmm. that. This just was a studio that fired its director several months before they began production on this film. They brought him in. The script had to be completely overhauled, rewritten to match with what the studio kind of wanted for their feel of this final film. And it kind of smacks of that desperation and that rushed script. I mean, script and plot are the big part, are your big problems in this movie. And we'll get into those in spoilers. Jay, do you have a score for the film? What's your score, man?
A B minus.
I think that's fair. It's still technically a positive review on the film. It talks about your enjoyment, but it is what it is.
And that's really what, like, I was kind of torn between C plus and B minus, but ultimately I still enjoyed a lot of it. And the Star Wars in me, I'm not as big a fan of as you are, obviously, at all, but it's one of those things where I still enjoyed a lot of the movies and I still enjoyed a lot of the characters. And I think, you know, and I keep going back to this, the acting really, really did sold a lot of this movie for me. And you know, there's a lot of issues, but at the same time, you know, that's what kept the grade kind of low, obviously, because I had to still criticize the movie and be a quote unquote film critic of this movie. But at the same time, as a fan, I still had a lot of enjoyment in it, and there was a lot of fun stuff to be had. So it's tough to grade. It's tough to grade, but I'm happy with the B minus grade for me. I'll probably stick with that. You know, even with multiple viewings, I'm sure it'll pretty much stay the same. But Dave, what about you?
So, I mean, just to jump off of what you were saying about mm-hmm. the acting and stuff, I think 100% I would not have been sold on Kylo Ren in this film if it wasn't for Adam Driver. I really think that what he brought
to it, he still amazes me, I'll tell you.
What he brought to it is what sold me on it, right? Because I have historically
a lot to do with this.
So I can't get into it too much here, but he sold me on it. Daisy Ridley did a better job than I feel she's done in the past two films. I thought that she was given a whole lot more as a character to work with here.
Oh, yeah.
And they really built Finn up into a proper character this time.
And Poe, too. I mean, all four of those guys, all those four of those main characters of this trilogy had a lot more to do
and in a lot of ways
a lot more character development too.
And I got to give a big hand to Anthony Daniels, C-3PO, for this film, because this is the best portrayal of C-3PO I've seen since the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. You know, he was relegated to the background in a lot of the past two. This time he was brought to the forefront. He's on that mission with them, and what he brings to it, I really enjoyed. I know that this is the last time I'm seeing C-3PO, so I was happy with what I got from him. So, from Anthony Daniels. So for that alone, and the fact that the script, even though it was fumbling in the dark, trying to take off the bra, just like we all did on our first time.
Now I'm a one-handed.
Right,
I'm a pro,
master.
Man. I'm a
even though it was doing all of that, it still managed to resonate with me because it still did some good character development. And that, in the end, is what Star Wars is about, is the characters, not so much the story that they're in. It's making you feel for the characters. So for me, it's a B+. And the only thing that drops it down lower than any type of A is because the plot and the script I felt were just absolutely weak. So B plus, that's where I'm at. And I think your B minus is pretty fair. So you can reach, if this is where you're going to jump off, because we're about to jump into spoilers, you can reach out to us on our social medias. I'm on Twitter at SuperMoviePod. You can reach out to me there. Let me know if you disagree with the score. Let me know if you would have given it a higher score, lower score. Let me know your vitriol hate or your absolute praise for it. Jay, where can people find you to talk to you?
Facebook, Super Movie Bros Podcast, or Instagram, Super Movie Bros.
All right, Jay, that's it, man. Let's get into our spoiler section.
Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning.
All right, Jay, plot of this movie, man. I'm just going to read something that I wrote down for you.
With it. It's a long one, guys, but it's good.
We'll start jumping off of this. So, Emperor Palpatine has been alive since Return of the Jedi through the use of Sith alchemy and possibly cloning. It's not really explained, but like a lot of other plot points in the film, we are asked to just go with it and not question a lot of what we see through the film's runtime. We know that it was through means many would consider to be unnatural. Much like the Legends comic Dark Empire, in which the Emperor was revived via cloning and he places his essence into a younger clone husk of himself with the ultimate goal of him possessing the unborn child inside Leia. Similar plan here, except instead of a younger clone of himself, he was using his skin puppet Snoke. And I mean, come on, let's be honest. If you could wear any skin puppet, why in the world would you pick a form that is equally as unfuckable as yourself as Palpatine as Snoke? I mean, because like they're both equally as ugly. But with the ultimate goal of using Ben Solo to turn to the dark side and creating a bond between Ben and Rey, revealed to be the granddaughter of Emperor Palpatine, I know what you guys are thinking. Who in the world would have fucked this guy? And when is Marvel telling that story in the comic books? Ben would then later lure Rey to this secret Sith temple on Exegol in the Outer Reaches, where Palpatine says he has been every voice inside of Ben Solo's head that he has ever heard, manipulating him. Once lured to Exegol, Rey would then fall to the dark side when she uses her anger and hate to strike Palpatine down, allowing his spirits and thousands of other Sith spirits to inhabit her body, making her Empress Palpatine. With this plan, he would have effectively destroyed the last of the Jedi and ensured his own immortality and a long reign of the Sith across the galaxy. Now, what's crazy is 90% of what I just read is in the first 2 minutes of this film. You read the opening crawl and you find out Emperor Palpatine's alive. It says it in literal caps and bold letters. Emperor Palpatine is alive.
The dead speaks.
And the whole galaxy figures it out through a transmission that happened off screen and all this stuff. I was just like, wow. They teased us with like the Emperor will be back. I was expecting like a fourth quarter reveal of him, and they're like, nah, fuck you. Right off the bat, buddy, he's here. And I was like, okay, I kind of give it a little bit of praise for that brevity. I get it. All right. Well, I'm past the opening crawl now. And then we get like these jump cuts of Kylo like doing all these things.
But it really, the script had nothing to say. No. Ultimately, when you really think about it, like it really didn't say it ultimately said that we're starting a few years after Last Jedi, and that's really it, and that the dead speak. So it's like, oh, okay, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and that's it. And
there's an artifact that they're all going to look for, but that's, come on, that's silly.
it's a Sith Wayfinder. And I had someone ask me, why is it a Sith Wayfinder and not a holocron? Why not call it a holocron? It's because holocrons usually contain the essence of a Sith spirit or a Jedi spirit that divulge knowledge and training and stuff like that. This is literally a Sith GPS, so it's Sith Wayfinder. Yeah. And that's the reason for it. It's because it carries no essence of an individual, no training, no message from anybody, nothing about that, about a person is involved in it, and that's what a holocron usually carries. This is just a Sith Wayfinder because it's your car's GPS. So probably brought to you by Anthony Daniels.
Right
off the bat, like, all right, so Kylo's on the fucking scent of this thing. We don't know how he's on the scent of it. We just know that he heard the message as well. You have to just assume that he was getting the messages from the Emperor to come out there and find him. We do learn that he was basically being controlled by the Emperor the entire time. Every voice ever heard in his head, Snoke, Darth Vader, has always been the Emperor manipulating him towards the dark side. He fell for, he took the bait, he went with it, and now he's there on Exegol meeting the Emperor face to face, and he, just like Vader, is now basically his new apprentice, his new lackey. When he's in there in Exegol, we see that there are vats of Snokes. Like, there are just Snokes just piled up literally inside of goo. And you know, who knows how Snoke was created, either through something we learned from Mandalorian, a strand cast, which we heard in episode 7 of The Mandalorian, or maybe it is some sort of cloning technology. But one thing's for sure, Snoke should have been a much better looking person if you were gonna gonna make him from the beginning.
That's true.
I can only assume that the dark side of the Force was deteriorating Snoke, like they talk about in the Kylo Ren comic, which just came out a couple weeks ago. That the dark side deteriorates him the way that it was deteriorating the Emperor throughout his lifespan. How he got there, we don't know. Was his body destroyed in the subcore of the Death Star? Maybe he did have cloning. Maybe they salvaged what they could. We do see like stitches on his fingers and stuff like that. So it looks like they may have gathered pieces of his body and just kind of like cobbled him together and his force.
Whatever power that he has probably reconnected his body to come back to that temple.
That's what I can only assume. And I like to
just
think,
to keep him barely alive still in.
And I like I to know. Think that we learned in Rebels that Grand Admiral Thrawn had been in the outer reaches and the outer rims and all this stuff before he returned to crush the Rebels on Lothal. Maybe he knows about Exegol because of Thrawn's extensive knowledge of the outer rims, and that's very possible. So something that me and Duty were talking about, Duty from Shaken Not Nerd, yeah. Something that me and him were talking about. So there's that aspect. He is alive. But now getting Rey there and finding out that Rey is the granddaughter of Emperor Palpatine, like, that raises so many questions, right? Like,
we can go on a whole conversation,
like, first off,
tyrant about that.
First off, I first questioned who would fuck.
We both agree that we don't like that,
right?
At all.
No, I don't like that. But I first questioned who would fuck Emperor Palpatine. Then I have to assume because he's the Emperor, he probably has some sort of concubines and stuff like that. He did have a child, a son, who was married, had a wife, who then had a child, Rey. And you know, the movie does nothing to tell you that they are good or bad people. They are just the base needs of what a parent needs to be. They do everything they can to keep their child alive and away from the Emperor, who does want to kill the child so that he can take her body, or at least have the child do the Sith ritual that they're talking about, where Rey would destroy him and all the Sith would embody her. Great, good, wonderful. Like, most of this, though, I am just having to piece together from what you gave me, and I don't have all the answers. I don't need all the answers either, but I need a little bit more than what you were giving me, because I'm finding out he's got a Sith fleet out there. Okay, who was building that fleet? How many people are out there? No, not a lot? Okay. Okay, fine. I'll go with the ships. But what about the people that man the ships? Why is there hundreds of thousands of people out there with all new Sith uniforms, all new weapons that we've never seen? Where are they coming from?
Exactly.
Because we know the First Order does come
to
meet.
It's one of those things you just have to go with.
Right.
That's all it was. An unanswered thing that's not going to be answered, right?
The First Order comes to meet the Final Order, as this group of Star Destroyers is called, and they do merge their powers to take on what's left of the Resistance, but it's like, that's not enough people. Like, it's not, there's thousands of ships out there, and each one is manned by hundreds, if not a couple thousand people. So we're talking like at least, at the very minimum, 500,000 people out here. I know it's a large galaxy, but how was the Emperor just doing all this? Was this secret empire out there ruling the outer reaches and no one ever knew? There's a lot of pill to swallow, and I know in coming up in media, in books, and in comic books, some of this stuff will get answered, not all of it, but some of it, and that's great. But for this movie, it made me just go, okay, I have to go with it, because the plot is moving forward and I need to keep up with it. All right, on to my next thing. So the plan that Emperor Palpatine put in place would have gone off without a hitch if Kylo wasn't turned back to the light by the combined forces of Rey and Leia, and a memory of his father, Han Solo, who kind of shows up when they're in that duel. This comes at the sacrifice of Leia's life, which she had to give all of her power to reach Ben and Rey in that moment. So once Ben is turned back to the light side, he then rushes to aid Rey in her confrontation of the Emperor. We then learn that Ben and Rey are diodes within the Force. So I looked up a definition of diode. A diode is a semiconductor device with two terminals that typically allows the flow of a current in one direction. So a diode, in this case, is two conductors of the Force who allow the Force to flow in one direction. Right. Previous to this movie, they were flowing in opposite directions, light and dark.
Mm-hmm.
But now that they are together, they are both aligned with the light. They are
Which flowing is interesting.
In one direction. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah.
But not a whole lot of extrapolation on that.
No.
This power then allows Palpatine to drain the life force from both Ben and Rey, simultaneously restoring him to full power, allowing him to ascend the throne once again and destroy both Rey and Ben. After the Emperor throws Kylo down a chasm in an effort to kill the last Skywalker, Rey reaches out through the Force to the Jedi of the past. Remember, 1,000 generations live in Rey now. Here we hear the voices of Obi-Wan, both Ewan McGregor and Alec Guinness, Qui-Gon Jinn, Mace Windu, Yoda, Anakin Skywalker, Ahsoka Tano, Kanan Jarrus, Ezra Bridger, Luke, and of course Leia. Rey is then able to reverse the Sith's combined might back at Palpatine, melting him like at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, but this proves to be too much and Rey passes away herself. But just then, Ben reveals that he is alive, gives his life Force to Rey. They kiss and he winds up dying like some reverse Sleeping Beauty-esque shit.
Yeah, it's like, how the fuck does his powers do that? Not only transfer into the moment, but still have that kind of power and then still transition the power into her body.
So here's
to save her life.
So here's what I figured out.
It's amazing.
We know that they are out there looking for the Wayfinder. It takes them to Passana, which brings them into contact with the First Order, and we think Chewie's dead. Then they wind up going to the other planet where we meet Sori Bliss, and we meet Babu Frick, who then takes that information that C-3PO couldn't translate out of him, and then, you know, they then wind up going to Endor, one of the other moons of Endor, where basically the main part of the Death Star crashed. So then we get this epic fight between Kylo Ren and Rey, who's been following her the whole time here on Endor, and the whole reason for this fight is to A, allow Leia to sacrifice herself. We can get Leia out of the story because we didn't have Carrie Fisher to finish it, so we had to get her out of the story and she has to use all of her power and die in reaching Ben. But Rey also has to kind of touch the dark side here, kill Ben, and then ultimately have to heal him. By her healing him, she is then giving him knowledge of that power, which allows him to use that power later on when he turns back good in the end. And I think that's the only reason that Ben was stabbed in this moment was so that the healing power could be given. And it's the whole reason why Disney Plus put out Baby Yoda healing Grief Karga in The Mandalorian Episode 7 before this movie came out, so that true Star Wars fans could get it and be like, okay, that is a thing. It used to only be a power that existed in Legends in Knights of the Old Republic, but now it exists here in these films. And
well, they're obviously extremely Force, not just sensitive, but they are one of the most powerful people that the Force has ever experienced before, that at least that we've seen, you know, character wise.
And that's one of the things that I like
the expansion on that. And I think it makes sense. It does make sense to me. I mean, as far as they're both very powerful, very young, very eager to learn, and are honing in more and more about their
talents. And The Last Jedi, this is one of the few things that The Last Jedi set up that I thought they did really well, was them being able to see each other, but maybe not their surroundings and stuff like that, but still touch, grab, and take things from each other, right? Like, they were able to touch even though they weren't in the same place in The Last Jedi. So here, like, Kylo grabs her necklace, pulls it off, and takes it, and is able to find her on Passana because he took that necklace from her, right? And then, you know, later on he finds out that she's on his capital ship because when they're having their lightsaber duel, Darth Vader's helmet falls in front of his feet where he's down on the planet's surface, but she's up in the ship, and so he realizes where she is. It does this, it keeps this connection alive and extrapolates on that. So when we finally get to the last moment and she is standing in front of the Emperor and she cocks the lightsaber back like she's going to strike him down just like he wants her to do, she passes it behind her back so that he could take out all the Knights of Ren with it. And then she pulls Leia's lightsaber out, which she received from Luke on Octo. chateau when she went there to hide. And that is the only moment in this that really is paying homage to The Last Jedi, right? Because now Rey's story is following Luke's story, right? When she becomes afraid of what's in front of her, when she doesn't think that she can face it, just like Luke didn't think that he could continue on.
Which makes sense, right?
She goes to Octo to hide, just like he did. Yeah. And it's only because we got Yoda in The Last Jedi to teach Luke where he was wrong, and we got that revelation and that character movement from Luke. Even if people didn't like where Luke was in The Last Jedi, we can still believe the turn that he takes here because of what The Last Jedi did, where he sacrifices himself as a Force ghost. We can believe that here now because now their stories are parallel, her and Luke, and he's going to help her get past it because, Jay, what did Yoda say in The Last Jedi? We are what they grow beyond. And that's the whole point of Luke showing up here, is to help Rey grow beyond what he is. And I actually really like that. I like that a lot. It tied it into The Last Jedi. It's the only thing that really that The Last Jedi did for this movie was to give us the belief in these Force powers, that since they're diodes in the Force, whatever Rey knows, Ben then knows. So if she knows how to heal things, then he knows how to heal things, which is why he can heal her at the end. And they can pass the lightsaber back and forth through their through their connection in the Force. And also the fact that Luke Skywalker shows up and helps Rey get over herself. Like, he couldn't, because she is growing beyond him. Before we get into like everything else, Jay, I just want to know, out of the new characters, did you like any of them? Did you like Zuri Bliss? Did you like Carrie Russell in that role? I very much saw her as a plot device, but
she was a plot device. However, I liked her a lot.
Yeah.
Along with...
How about her end scene where like they've won and Poe kind of like, there's a little bit of flirting between them. You understand there's some sort of relationship.
Because before he asked for a kiss and she was like, no.
Right. And then he's looking at her and he gives her this look like, you want to go in the tent and you want to do it? You want to celebrate? And she just shakes her head very slowly like, no. And I was like, I like it. I like that.
But also for Finn, Jana, she was really cool addition as well. I liked her a lot. The actress Naomi Aki, I believe.
Naomi Aki.
And
we learned something interesting about the stormtroopers because of her, right?
I did, and I liked her character as well. So that was one of those things where, like, fuck, if they made this movie like a two part movie, part one, part two, they could have done so much more with this. So much. It should have done it that way.
10 pounds of plot stuffed in a 5-pound bag.
But these two female characters had such a great, they were such a great addition to Finn and Poe,
right?
And it was so underdeveloped and so plot contrived, and it just didn't work overall. It was unsatisfying, and you could see the potential, and it was again one of those things where like, oh, they just dropped the ball again.
But once again, she's a cool designed character, and you don't she get really to see was a lot.
And I didn't like her ending, because all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm just gonna saddle up.
She saddles up to the smoothest motherfucker in the galaxy. Fucking Lando
was awesome in this movie,
dude. His
character was really well done.
He didn't like openly hit on her, but he was straight up hitting on her, and I couldn't help but think of Han Solo just being like,
and all of a sudden she's just gonna go and find out where she came from.
Why not?
I guess
I like that.
I don't know.
The thing that like we learn about Jaina, because she was a former stormtrooper just like Finn, and her hiding out on the Endor moon is much like the Finn leaving. She was attacking a village, killing innocents, and she couldn't go with it. She didn't like it. She felt something. And I really realized that, like, oh my God, since the First Order was stealing children from all these random planets and stuff like that to swell their ranks, they were taking children that very well could have been Force sensitive.
Yeah.
Which means that this is backwards.
Can we get into that?
This is retroactively saying Finn is somewhat Force sensitive. Jaina's somewhat Force sensitive, because they at least could, I mean, basically because they had the ability to empathize, but they had a feeling, something awoken in them.
Well, this is the thing where I think this is a trilogy thing. Because JJ had it in his first movie, The Force Awakens. I take that as like the Force is awakened throughout all the galaxies, and it's much more stronger, and it's hitting many more characters that we are not seeing. However,
you're getting into something I was saving for the end.
Well, I have to get into it because this is one of my favorite things about it. Because like then all of a sudden you see at the very end of Ryan's movie with the young stable boy with the broom, and he has the powers. He's obviously Force sensitive, but then with, you know, with
I'm gonna table your discussion for 2 seconds.
Okay.
And then I'll get into it.
It's a nice little
So we like these new characters, we like the idea of them. They gave us little hints at what their greater role in the story could have been, but wasn't because of poor planning throughout this entire trilogy. Babu Frick, the little guy that cracks open C-3PO's head because of the dagger, right? Like, I mean, the dagger that works like the Goonies, medallion, where I guess you just happen to be standing at the right distance away from something to tell tell where something, that made no sense. But anyway, C-3PO has the coordinates for where the Wayfinder is hidden, and he can't access it because the Sith language has been basically outlawed by the Senate and the New Republic where at the time that he was built, and he's received his updates, so he's not allowed to read it. So they have to go to this basically droid mechanic and have them crack his skull open and get to the information that he has inside, thus resetting his memory, meaning that we are losing C-3PO, at least the C-3PO that we know. And C-3PO losing his memory is like one of four death fakeouts that we get in this movie. They tease a lot of people's deaths throughout this movie, and they kind of wanted to play on my heartstrings a little bit, and I kind of gave it to them the first few times, and I finally went like, you know what, fuck you. Like, you keep killing people and bringing them back. You're starting to bother me at this point with your Deus Ex Machinas. But anyway, so Babu Frick is getting this information from him, and this is where we get the droid, you know, Dio, moments before this, who I absolutely loved because he was kind of like this abused shelter puppy who is like,
I know.
No, thank you.
He had no purpose in this movie whatsoever.
He did,
but
except to
he was still very adorable.
Kind of like tell us
little
kind of tells us what we should feel.
Little puppy dog.
Like when C-3PO's memory is going to be erased, he's just like sad. You know, sad. It's sad. We're gonna lose him. and then, like later on, she fixes his wheel, and he's just like, "Thank you, very kind." And he like squeeze, just goes around in circles and stuff. I love Dio, and I loved Babu Frick. And like when C-3PO's mind gets erased, and they get the information,
I know.
And you know, he gives one last look to all of his friends. I absolutely love that. But I liked when he woke up, and you know, and he's just like,
it was fun. It was funny too.
Greetings, I am C-3PO, human cyborg relations, and who are you?
I am Babu Frick.
Like, oh my god, I want to take that little gremlin home. He's fucking adorable. So when he showed up at the end, where him and Zori Bliss didn't die when that planet got blown up, and they show up at the end, and he's just like, yeah! And I was like, oh, fuck, I love you, Babu Frick. I'm so happy that you made it. But that was one of like four death freakouts that we got. We, you know, Chewie got taken on the transport, where we got Rey using Sith lightning that blew up the transport. Now, I knew Chewie wasn't dead because I saw two Sith transports out there. So when we find out 5 minutes later that Chewie is alive, I was not surprised. I didn't think that Chewie would go out like that off screen without seeing his death.
But again, that was stupid.
That was
a horrible sequence.
It was pretty bad.
There was obviously no other ship right there. He obviously went on that ship and went up, and she fucking killed it.
If you saw when Finn comes out and he does see them there questioning him, there is two transports sitting there. So when Finn runs off, no, it was trickery. Don't get me wrong. Like,
big time.
It was editing trickery, but yeah, there was two ships there. And that's when I knew. I was like, Chewie ain't dead. But like, Lauren got super upset. Like, she grabbed my hand and was like I saw like tears streaming down her face because she was like, Chewie's gone. And Chewie is her
favorite.
Absolute favorite. And, you know, we also, the part that made me cry was after they return from Endor and Rey has run off in Kylo Ren's TIE fighter, they return, they learn of Leia's death. And when Chewie learns of Leia's death, his reaction is just fucking gut-wrenching. And that is the only part in the movie where I truly cried. Like, where I was like, I cried because of Chewie's reaction. Just like, you know, Han Solo's death in the first one. Like, I expected it. I knew it was coming, but it didn't hit me until Chewie's reaction to it. So, the new characters, I liked. I didn't like that there's four death freakouts in the movie where they trick their audience into this emotional state because those deaths wouldn't have been
earned. I find that very, very cheap most of the time. And I think it definitely felt cheap at times in this movie as well. It was, you know, there's a lot of fan service in this movie overall. And it's pretty jarring sometimes, and it works sometimes, but at the same time, some of it was just unnecessary.
There's a lot of things in this, but I think you and I have run long enough. I think we've talked about the things that we've liked a lot in the spoilers, you know, and we liked that of what it took from The Last Jedi and built upon with the Force powers. We really liked the characterizations. We like where we took the characters on their journey throughout this film. We just didn't so much like the plot that's around them. But I want to get into like our final thing, the thing that me and you together, like we both have the same feeling on this without discussing it beforehand. We both have the same feeling on this. We learned that Rey is a Palpatine in this, which was a theory that was out there for some time. And we're kind of both against that, right? Like it feels more impactful if she's no one. She could still choose to be a Skywalker in the end, just like this film ends, whether she's a Palpatine or she's no one, and adds to the mythology if she's no one. The Force isn't, you know, inherently attached to these bloodlines of Skywalker and Palpatine.
Yeah.
You know, and that bothers me that the Force,
because it doesn't make any sense for the other movies. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense for The Last Jedi, 100%.
At all, no.
So the Force works in ways that not everyone can see. You know, a darkness rising and the light rushing to meet it. That's what Snoke said in The Last Jedi. And I like the idea of the Force awakening in Rey to bring this balance in the way that it kind of did with Anakin, right? Like having the Force being something that only a few in the galaxy with special blood like Skywalkers and Palpatine can truly access and can use to affect real change in the galaxy reduces its power and the feeling that you get from it. By having a filthy junker girl abandoned on a planet rising up to destroy the greatest evil known to the galaxy that inspires people, it makes people feel empowered too.
She can be just as powerful. She doesn't have to have a certain blood lineage to be powerful.
Right.
She just needs to have the Force.
It makes people feel like they're not voyeurs in this conflict, like they're not voyeurs in this story, and maybe they have some chosen reason for being here too. Those who come from nothing being empowered and doing great things, you know, it's the same exact thing that Luke started out as in A New Hope. He was a farm boy giving this mission and this path that he went on. Now, it wound up being his legacy. It wound up being his bloodline that brought him here to this mission. But why do we have to do that again? Why do we have to tell that story again? Why can't it be from nothing? And that's the thing that I took away from The Last Jedi the most that I loved. And yeah, me and Jay may be Last Jedi apologists here, but I really like the message that The Last Jedi gave us. The Star Wars films aren't just for you anymore. They're not just for those who love the original trilogy. I love the original trilogy. None of these films will ever beat that original trilogy for me, but I'm passing it on to a new generation, right? And having Rey come from nothing ties it to nothing from those original trilogies, just allowing the characters from that original trilogy to come through and be here. And people may not have been happy about where Han was when we met him, you know, divorced pretty much, you know, out there back to being a smuggler and stuff like that. But none of us ever truly live up to the potential that we feel that we should have. And that's just part of becoming an adult. And that's the story that they were telling us. Luke didn't become the great savior of the galaxy that everyone needed to become. He didn't become the great grandmaster. He failed in that endeavor as well. But the idea is to continue failing because it's our greatest lesson, which is what Yoda says in The Last Jedi. It's what builds us up, to what raises us up. And for people to not like The Last Jedi, I get that. I get it. But the messages behind The Last Jedi, what it gave us, meant so much to me, especially that little farm boy at the end. There is someone who is Force-powered, literally coming from nothing. He's a filthy little stable boy.
Yeah.
Being whipped by some mole with fucking herpes.
We love that. I love that.
I love the idea of him taking the broom, because him using the Force and taking that broom is the next generation of Star Wars fans being passed to and moving forward. Having Rey become a Palpatine in the end kind of cheapens it for me. I'm not knocking the film for that. It didn't go into my review score for it at all. I just wish that it ended in a different way, because I feel that the Force is more powerful than these to Bloodlines. But when you're saying that you're closing out a trilogy that is the Skywalker saga was these two bloodlines tied together. You know, Palpatine learned from Darth Plagueis the Wise to create life. The life that was created was Anakin. Anakin Skywalker goes on to bring balance to the Force by both falling to the dark side and then destroying the Emperor, and then going on to have his two children, Luke and Leia, who had, you know, Ben Solo, you know, from Han Solo, and Leia, who is also a Skywalker, despite the fact that his last name is Solo, and ensuring that those two children that he had, Leia and Luke, were the ones who were Rey's masters. They were the ones who trained Rey, who gave her everything that she took into that final battle with Palpatine, came from Leia and Luke. And that, to me, gives her the right at the end when that old woman on Tatooine asks her, who are you? And she says, Rey Skywalker. You know, like, she took a little bit too long to say it, because if I was that old woman, I would have been like, all right, you know what? I didn't care. I was just being friendly. Okay. I don't care. I'm going to walk away, because she took a long time to answer that question about what her name was at the very end, as she's burying both Luke and Leia's lightsabers, which I fully expect them being buried there means that they will show up at some point later on down the Star Wars saga line.
I'm sure it would. I mean, but like, on a quick little tangent, Domhnall Gleeson's character.
Oh, you want to get into that now?
Because this is another big thing for me.
Well, I'm in the middle of my diatribe, but yeah.
Well, I thought you were done, but like, you know.
I was getting there.
Keep going, go on.
No, finish. No, got it.
Okay.
he was Fulcrum. He was the spy.
He was the spy.
Fulcrum from Rebels. Every spy that spies on the Empire,
which
for
made
the rebellion
no sense,
is Fulcrum. That didn't.
He quickly got killed off by Richard E. Grant's character.
It made sense by the competition that was set up between them in The Last Jedi.
Perhaps
when you remember when Snoke was dead, he says, "Well, who says that you Kylo Ren are the supreme leader?" And then he just chokes him or throws him around. And he's like, "Oh yeah, I can't really fight that." Right. So it set up that competition there, and this is kind of.
But I thought it would be so much stronger. You know,
oh, so did I.
If he rose and got greater and more angrier and more became more of a supervillain, rising up along
not
with
even force
Kylo,
power, but something that
because he was always it was always like him and Kylo, like back and forth, and he was just like a fucking scoring little puppy dog.
Nope, he
became
wound up
a little bitch.
He wound up being a plot device to get them out of prison, and that's
it. That was it. It was like, come on, this guy is awesome. And then you just pass essentially his role as he has been throughout the trilogy.
Domhnall Gleeson will never will never be as great in these films as he was in The Force Awakens, when, you know, he was like, every star system will bow to the power of the First Order. I absolutely love that.
So good.
It was so good. But he never reached those heights again throughout this trilogy.
I don't know why.
I know. It was
they
so
set
good.
Him up so well, and they just it was another one of those things.
And they
with
did
the characters.
And they did a great actor dirty like that.
Yeah.
You wanted more from him.
And it's almost like, I don't know, man. Like, it's almost like you gotta stop hiring great actors for side characters. they just deliver so strongly.
But this is Star Wars. This is where Daniel Craig showed up and asked to be anything. He didn't care, and they put him in a stormtrooper outfit, right? You don't know, Domhnall Gleeson may have just done this, may have just auditioned for this film maybe he didn't know Hux would be in all three films when he auditioned for it, but fans just gravitate towards this, and a lot of people in Hollywood are fans of this, and they'll do anything to be in it. And maybe Domhnall Gleeson is just that. I don't know the story of how he was cast in it, but I do think that they gave us a pretty good character in the first two movies that I was interested to see do more in this one, and they regulated him into nothing. The Knights of Ren were nothing, Jay. They were built up from the first film. You know, Kylo Ren, the leader of the Knights of Ren, and then we didn't see them in the second movie. We kind of find out that they're Kylo Ren and Snoke's lackeys and stuff like that. We see them rolling squad deep throughout this film. Always six of them, always walking together. They are like the frat of Ren, more so. Like, where they go and do a mission and crush some kegs afterwards and maybe sexually assault a few people. And when they finally confront him at the end, even though it's a cool thing when Rey passes him the lightsaber, their fight is ultimately like nothing. Like, I felt like Kylo was not even close to being matched by six guys that are supposedly force adept in some way. So you build these things up, and it's maybe not even necessarily that the films built them up. We as fans saw them, enjoyed them, and built them up in our heads, and the payoff that we got wasn't as good. Same thing with Boba Fett that we got. Jay, coming here to the end now, you know, we're talking about Rey bearing her lightsaber, bearing Luke and Leia's lightsabers at the Lars homestead, because she couldn't fly by in a Millennium Falcon and just chuck Leia's lightsaber out to the asteroid field that used to be Alderaan. So she buries it here with Luke at the Lars
Skywalker Ranch.
Skywalker Ranch, pretty much. She takes the moniker of Skywalker, which I feel like she earned. Whether she was a Palpatine or a nobody,
I agree.
She earns the moniker of Skywalker, and I like that she took it. But she reveals her new lightsaber, and her new lightsaber is built from her staff that she's carried throughout the films, and it's revealed to be a yellow blade. And, you know, the way lightsaber crystals work is that they are neutral. They're clear, whitish when they're first discovered, and it is through the power and the personality of the Jedi who finds it that changes its color. Yellow lightsabers were, at least in canon now, were historically saved for people who were the guardians of the Jedi Temple. They are more of like a neutral thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in the end is really just saying who Rey is as a Jedi. She isn't a warrior. She isn't a thinker, a great user of the Force. She is the Bendu. She is the one in the middle. She hangs out in that area. She is not dark side. She's not light side. She's taking what she's learned and her lineage, and she's moving it forward. And a yellow lightsaber is just kind of that.
Her new path, her own path.
It's her own path. And making your lightsaber is kind of like one of the last steps to becoming a full Jedi yourself. So that's what it is in the end. There's a whole lot you can learn about yellow lightsaber crystals and all that stuff. So you can go check people out over on YouTube. And Basta Lashan in Knights of the Republic had a yellow lightsaber. Yellow lightsabers have been around for me for a long time, but canon-wise, they didn't show up until we saw the Jedi Temple Guards in Clone Wars and then later on Rebels. But now they are meant to symbolize sort of more of like a neutral, and they also symbolize an old Republic type sentimentality to them, more so than New Republic, New Jedi, green, blue, sometimes purple for one guy at least, but yellow was reserved for special people. So Rey is one of those special people. She is now the temple guard, if you would say, for the legacy of the Skywalkers moving forward, but also the temple guard of the Jedi legacy moving forward. So
yeah,
I think that was the meaning of her yellow lightsaber. Jay, anything else before we get out of here? Anything spoilerish we didn't touch on?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean,
I didn't bother going.
There are a few things that we didn't touch and get into. But
I didn't bother going.
There's a lot. There's a lot
from beginning to end, because you know what's the point of doing that. The people who are here know the plot, so they're picking up what we're talking about as we're talking about it.
Sure, absolutely. And then, you know, if you guys want to get into any other details, you can easily reach out to us. You heard our details earlier on in the episode as far as reaching out to Dave or myself. We love talking Star Wars.
Yeah.
Hit us up. Let's get into it even more.
Twitter at SuperMoviePod. Jay is on Facebook.
Yeah, hit me up on Facebook, Super Movie Bros Podcast. Hit me up on there. Message me, whatever. You can message me or make a comment on Instagram, Super Movie Bros.
This may be my least favorite of this Star Wars trilogy, but in the end,
it is for me too. Yeah,
in the end, I still enjoyed what I got. The joy I felt sitting in a theater waiting for a Star Wars movie to start is still there. I know we're a little ways away from getting another one, and I'm okay with that, but I can't wait to recapture this feeling and do it again. You know, like I hold no hate for anybody who dislikes this movie or likes this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm cool with having a
I get both perspectives. I really do.
I'm cool with having a fun Star Wars discussion. Next week, I think me and Jay will have our full review for The Mandalorian. which will be fun.
Because, yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
Because we got the last episode coming up. It's been a great season. And I was thinking
about, I like the direction that they went with this.
I know we're going a little long here, but I was thinking about this as you and I were discussing The Mandalorian in last episode when we were talking Rogue One. That because they are so close to the original trilogy, and because everything about them feels very, you know, original trilogy to us, I think that's why we wind up liking it more. It doesn't take any new logical leaps. It's not breaking new ground. It's just giving us new characters in a universe that we're already familiar with, and that might be why we love it so much. And, you know, if you don't have Disney Plus, you're not watching The Mandalorian, can't recommend it enough. I don't know who out there is not. I think me and Jay should, you know, get to doing before we end our Star Wars, you know, reign of terror on SMB here. We should get into doing something for Super Movie Bros Patreon for that. So if you want to join the Patreon, you can head over to patreon.com/supermoviebrospodcast over there. If you don't have the means to support the show monetarily and you are enjoying it, then head to your favorite podcatcher, leave it a review if it allows you to. So I want to thank all of you guys for listening. Have a great one.
Cheers.
May the force be with you.